Welcome to Between Faith and Reason with Jeff Lawrence.
What does it mean to be a man today? In culture where strength is often mistaken for oppression, where leadership is labeled control, where masculinity is redefined, deconstructed, or outright dismissed, is there still room for men to be good? We've all heard the phrase toxic masculinity. But what if that phrase itself has become toxic, muddying the waters, confusing virtue with vice, and distorting God's design for manhood? Today, on Between Faith and Reason, we're diving into this cultural conversation head-on, guided by deeply thoughtful work of Nancy Piercy in her book, The Toxic War on Masculinity. This isn't just a critique, it's a call to redemption, a rediscovery of what it means, truly means, to be a man made in the image of God. And joining me today is a man who has not only preached it, but lived it. Pastor Tim Grossand, senior pastor of First Baptist Church Winter Garden, brings decades of pastoral experience, biblical conviction, and godly wisdom to this conversation. Tim has helped shape a generation of men, including myself, with a vision of masculinity that is both humble and strong, tender and courageous. So let's step into the tension between faith and reason, between culture and conviction, and ask, what does biblical masculinity really look like? And is it possible to reclaim it? Welcome back to Between Faith and Reason. Just so excited about our topic today and sitting here with a good friend, Pastor Tim Grossand. And I'm reminded, Tim, of just maybe a year or more ago, sitting in your office having a conversation. And we always talk about so much, right?
Right. We can't stop.
Exactly.
We have lunch and then order the dinner menu.
It just keeps going. So one of the things that we were talking about was male leadership in the church, men as a whole, and how culture has in many ways shifted the way it looks at masculinity, right?
We're absolutely
kind of talking about that. So you recommended a book that I then bought. The name of the book is The Toxic War on Masculinity by author Nancy Piercy, and I went and ordered it and went through it immediately and just found it amazing. So I wanted to have you on today for us to really kind of talk about this subject some more. So welcome.
Well, I'm glad to be here. And there is definitely a war on masculinity in our culture. And they talk about toxic masculinity. And this book really takes that on. She's an amazing, brilliant mind. And she points out the fact that biblical masculinity has nothing to do with what today considers masculinity.
Right.
The brutishness and all of that.
Right.
But you look at the biblical definitions of what God created men to do as to be leaders and protectors and overseers of those who can't care for themselves. And she lays this out and says, we've got a choice to make whether we follow the culture with, you know, all the ugliness that gets attached to drunkenness and abusiveness and all of those things. And that is not God's plan.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that I immediately find interesting is what I have seen in culture and then juxtapositioning that against, you know, what is the better story here? You know, what is the higher call? So you don't have to watch long and hard on any type of programming. You know, it can be a sitcom, it can be something you're watching on Netflix, and you see this inference of masculinity,
right?
Either being weak or being toxic.
The fool,
right? And that has been perpetuated over time, and now we're seeing men in this culture, in modern times, struggling to find their identity.
Right.
Right? Who am I really supposed to be? And we'll get to, obviously, the higher call. The higher call is God has a better story in all of this, right?
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about where we're at, you know, what the problem is currently. And I think a lot of the listeners will resonate with this.
Men just need to step up and lead, but do it as Christ did, as a servant leader, and not as the boss, not as the guy who has to have his way, who has to be constantly competing against his own family.
Right.
And that is a common occurrence, is that men are so acclimated to being competitors and risk their relationships because they're always in a competitive mode. I discovered this early in my own marriage, that we'd get into a disagreement between my wife and myself, and I'd find myself competing and realizing when I won, she lost. Flesh of my flesh. I was defeating my own flesh.
Right.
And how foolish was that? And so I know I had to rediscover what it meant to be the spiritual head in my household, and not the guy competing to be in charge.
Right, right. So, you know, when you say that, I think about men in general and some of the things that I've seen in leadership roles within the church. I think men today are struggling to understand what it really means to lead. And I think the problem might be a generational problem, right?
Correct.
So you knew my dad. Right?
Amazing man.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So I grew up with a phenomenal role model, a phenomenal teacher, somebody who taught me what it really means to be a man in the biblical sense, in a very real practical sense too, right? But as I have had opportunity through the years to work with other men, I found out that I was in the minority.
Yes, you're in the exception.
Right.
Now, I was in the opposite. You know, my dad was a traveling salesman, and he'd come home and he would just lay waste to everything. Anger all the time. If we weren't doing it right, man, he was down our throats. And so, you know, you said, oh, dad's going to be home this weekend. But then inside you thought, I wonder what he's going to be upset about.
Yeah.
And that's what I had to overcome, is to realize that was not who I needed to be.
So that is what culture calls toxic masculinity.
Correct.
Right? And so because there has been such an epidemic, and what I have discovered personally is my experience is when I say I'm in 0.01% of the population, I literally believe that to be true, because my conversation with other men, with other dads, with other leaders has been, they didn't have the same type of experience. It was maybe more attuned to what your experience was, or somewhere in between, right? And so I think understanding, we do have a problem. I mean, there is a problem, and we have generations of men who don't know how to lead. So I think we have to admit that. But again, there's a better story. There's a better story here, and there's a way to recover. There's a way to begin to make a difference, right? Change this.
And oftentimes, people who are not knowledgeable of the scripture accuse Christianity of perpetuating that toxic part of masculinity, the brutishness. Women have to be submissive and all of this. When in fact, the reality of scripture is it's calling men to step forward and to lead their families with passion and concern and protection, to provide for their family. When you look at that, I have not run across any woman anywhere who doesn't want her man to step forward and to lead.
Right.
A woman doesn't want to be married with the guy that says, there's a noise downstairs. Why don't you get up and go downstairs and check it out?
Right.
No, she wants to know that her man is going to be there for her and
right.
step forward, but is also not going to abuse her or consider her lesser. That is not biblical. The biblical model is Christ with servant leadership, giving yourself away to those that you care about and those who can't care for themselves.
You know, I think understanding that when we say God has a better story, I think understanding that God's kingdom is an inverted kingdom. And what I mean by that, and we've talked about this in other episodes on this podcast, is when we hear leadership, that the role of the man is to lead, the scripture sees leadership as less than, not more than.
Correct.
Right? So if I am a leader in my at home and in my marriage, if I'm leading, it means I'm less than. It means I'm at the bottom and everybody is above me. Not I'm at the top and everybody right. is below me.
They're standing on your shoulder.
Right? So I think back as the scripture tells us that when Paul was giving guidance to marriages, right? This is how it should function. We see him talking about the man is to lay down his life.
Correct.
Right? And it's like, okay, the wife was not called to lay down her life. The man is called to lay down his life, to see her as greater than himself. And that kind of leadership is getting more towards the masculinity that God's called us.
Right. Well, scripture lays that out real clear. The man is to die for his wife. He is to pour himself out, even unto death, to care for his wife. And then she's called to submit to that leadership. Now, if you've got a choice between submission or death, I think the man's got a pretty high calling there, and
right.
women have nothing to complain about if they understand that, you know, if I follow your leadership, particularly in threatening situations, you're going to take care of me. You're going
right.
to take care of my children. You're going to take care of our household. I'm not going to have to worry about those things. I can do my thing because I know you are caring, looking over us all, and I can count on you. Particularly when times get tough.
Yeah. So if I can pause right here, because Tim, you know, we're talking about this, and if there's some men listening right now and they go, okay, that sounds good, right? I hear you, but I don't have a clue how to do this, right? I hear the information, but I've never seen it modeled for me.
Right.
Right. Which is a very tough place to be. I mean, I get it, right? So let's think about solutions. We know what the problem is, and the problem is in culture too. You know, I'm on staff here at Foundation Academy. I've been on staff at churches. I've worked with men. You do it on a daily basis. I know you've seen it. It requires some things in order to get from point A to point B. And a lot of it is unlearning in order to relearn truth.
Right.
Right. So let's switch gears a tad and talk to these guys who might be listening right now going, okay, I hear you, but how do I get there? What do I do?
Well, I'm actually going to take a left turn on you here.
Okay.
Because this book is amazing, and particularly those like yourself and I who are studying humanity and doing our research so that we can provide solutions and directions for young men, older men who are trying to find God's pattern for their life. There's another book, and it just came to mind.
Yep.
And in fact, it's by a popular radio host named Brant Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is called The Men We Need. And it is absolutely, I'm sick that I didn't bring a copy.
Nope. We'll put it in the show notes. We'll add that in the show notes.
The Men We Need. And he's got particular examples, chapter by chapter. I had a grandfather come to me. He says, my grandson's reading this book. It's changing who he is as a teenager. We, in fact, gave a copy to every dad in the church on Father's Day. Said, come by, get your copy. Now, a lot of men don't read, so he didn't just pass them out. He said, they're stacked right there. If you're going to read it, get it. And we're continuing to have to buy more copies because guys are coming in saying, hey, you got a copy of that book. And really good news, particularly for those of you who are in the Winter Garden area, Brant is coming to our church September 28th,
That's
Sunday
awesome.
Evening, and he is speaking at our annual prayer conference, which is a huge event for us. We get brilliant speakers in every year. We had Harris Faulkner last year.
Right.
Brant Hansen's coming in, and he's not only insightful, but he is hilarious. So, guys, that is going to be a place you want to park yourself this September. But like I say, that is a good book. This book is very scholarly. It's not an easy read.
So
I don't know, I'd recommend it to just the average guy out there. I would recommend The Men We Need.
See, that there you go. Because this book is good. If you enjoy reading and understanding how we got to where we're at and what are some of the ways that we can address it, it is definitely much more of an academic book. But we'll put in the show notes this other book. Again, give me the title of it and the author.
The Men We Need.
Okay. By
Brant Hansen.
Okay. So just check the show notes and a link will be there for you. So if we're talking some practical things, I know that one of the most important things for men is to have other men that they can talk to, that they can walk with. And Tim, one of the things I have suggested to other men, we do a coffee for dads here. I have other times where I'm talking to other men. And typically, I usually have a lot of guys waiting going, hey, I got some questions. Hey, here's the scenario. What do I do? You know, that type of thing. Typically, one of the things I suggest, see if you like this, is I ask them, do you know of a man, maybe a family member, maybe a grandfather, somebody in your life, do you know of a man who you could say, that's a guy I could pattern my life after?
Right.
Right? Do you have that type of guy? That's question number one. And question number two is, would you feel comfortable going to him, maybe even with some other guys, and say, would you mentor me? Would you walk with me? You know, some practical daily take steps to understand what is it truly to walk this out in a biblical understanding of
masculinity. Here's what's hilarious about that is in work, we get that.
Yeah.
If I want to be a craftsman, I don't just go buy tools. I go find a craftsman and say, show me, teach me.
Right.
I want to see how the master does this. If I'm going into business, teach me how to do this. We get this in every aspect. But the most important relationships in our lives, our family, it's like we're winging it.
Yeah.
And we don't take time to find an older, godly man who can speak truth. The guy who can look at you and say, you're an idiot, and you go, okay, explain that to me, not, oh, who are you?
Right.
No.
Right.
Tell me how I'm being an idiot.
Exactly.
Because I know they are speaking truth into my life and are not picking on me. They want my best.
Yeah.
So finding that man in your life who can really talk to you is vital. And very few men can name that guy. In fact, most men can't name three friends.
See, there's a problem. I mean, that is a problem. I will tell you, Tim, I think about some guys. I can see some faces right now of some men I'm talking to who have told me that very thing. And I think men long for community, the right kind of community, right? I mean, because if you're out on the baseball field, your kids are highly involved, you guys are running. You know, a lot of times I ask guys, okay, when do you say no? When do you say no to things?
Right.
Are you saying yes to everything? You know, so one of the first most important things, I think, is you got to find margin in order to find that guy.
Right.
You got to have the time, right, and begin to prioritize some things that should be prioritized as the top thing. And that first should be finding a mentor, right?
Right.
So, Tim?
I get men in my office. Their lives are coming apart. They're into alcohol. They're into a failing marriage. They're really struggling, and they're on the bottom, and they're looking for hope and some direction. And one of the questions that I ask frequently is, "Do you have an older, godly man who can speak into your life and call you into accountability?" And the answer 99% of the time is no.
Right.
And it's like, that's part of the reason you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Is that you've not allowed someone to call you to task and to say, hey, you need to get home. be with the wife and kids. Mm-hmm. Hey, you're putting in too much time at work. There was a book I read years ago. I don't think it's in print anymore, but it talked about the three things that defeat most men. And it was work and alcohol and sex.
Mm-hmm.
And those things can dominate us. But to have a mentor. Other thing I ask is, are you in a small group?
Yeah.
Does your church offer a small group, whether it's of men or like a Sunday school class? This is where men sit around and hear one another and realize, okay, I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
In fact, one of my most successful phrases in counseling is, oh, you're normal. And a guy will look at me and go, no, you don't understand. My life's a disaster. Right. All our lives are disasters.
Right.
That makes us normal.
Right.
So you're not that far off. A few tweaks and mid-course corrections, and you can be set on the straight pathway. When a man hears that, he goes, okay, I can take this on. But he needs that constant influence.
Yeah.
Someone who speaks to him. AA gets it right.
Yeah.
They tag you with a mentor who calls, the guy you call when you're at your weak point and you find yourself wanting to fall back.
Yeah.
So other men speaking into your life. So get into a Sunday school class, find that godly man that you respect who can look at you at any time and not out of meanness or talking down to you, but just as a friend. The scripture says that criticisms of a friend are better than kisses from an enemy. And so find that guy who's straight up with you. And men like that.
Yeah.
You know, we don't like beating around the bush. Let's just get to the point.
Yeah.
But men also don't like the idea of, well, let's get together and chat.
Yeah.
That's what women do.
Yeah.
Precisely. Men say, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And so it's difficult for men to take time because we're doers.
Yeah.
You know, talking, that's the girl's thing. But it needs to be our thing as well. But find a comfortable scenario that you can get yourself plugged into.
Yeah, so I'm just going to say that, again, church, are you part of a church? Are you part of a strong, Bible-believing church, New Testament community church? That's an important step in this.
Absolutely. You don't go to church to keep God from thumping you. You go to church because you desperately need to be among other believers who are trying to find what God has in mind for them.
That's right. And you said a small group. I just started with church. You know, there's a lot of people listening to this who are like, yeah, we don't do church. You know, we have other things. We're really busy. But guys,
that was a big thing in this book because Nancy pointed out the research, and she points out that a man who is actively involved in his church is significantly less likely to be abuse his wife, abuse his children. What was really fascinating in this study is they went the other direction. The guy who goes to church but is tepid about it, is not fully engaging, shows up on occasion when it's convenient, he actually has a worse scenario with abuse, addiction.
Yeah.
So the guy who just plays church is worse off than the average guy who doesn't even go to church.
Yeah.
I thought that was a mind blower for me. So it's like, okay, guys, get this real clear. Don't play around with God.
Yeah.
Get serious. Get all in. Get guys around you, champions who will call each other forward. But don't play around. It's just going to make you worse. In fact, Jesus put it pretty clear. The lukewarm, he just spits the lukewarm out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Either hot or cold, but lukewarm. So that research, like I said, I underlined that. I was looking for my copy of the book. I couldn't find it.
Yeah.
See that underlined.
That's an important point, really. I mean, because if Christianity is just one of many things you do, right, then it's not Christianity.
Right.
It's not the God of the Bible. And I think if you're listening to this, you're like, I'm struggling as a husband, I'm struggling as a dad, I'm struggling to find my identity, I'm I don't have a mentor. I don't have a place. Let me again say to you, start with the church. Start with the fundamentals. Start with the basic, you know, ground, the foundation, and build from there. You get in a strong church, you're going to get in a strong small group. Then you have opportunity to look at other men who have the same struggles that you do. They're going through the same things that you do, but instead of going and taking that out to a bar and just drinking your woes away, or going out and talking about your wives with other men on the golf course instead of true solutions.
Making fun of them.
Right, right. Now you have, in your frustrations, and hey, should I walk away? All of these type things. Now you have an opportunity to be surrounded by other men who are also struggling to move forward. But I call it failing forward, right?
Right.
We're all going to fail forward, but there's a greater story here. And God has said, you can't do this. You can't do it on your own strength.
Right.
But you can through me. You
know? Well, I go back to those three things that most men struggle with. Addictive substances. The scripture is replete with warnings about losing your sobriety, becoming intoxicated.
Right.
It constantly condemns that. But our society says, oh, you had a bad day, go have a drink.
Right.
Oh, you had a good day, go have a drink.
Right.
Oh, you had a mediocre day, have a drink.
Right.
It's constantly calling us to insobriety. When in fact, we all get it. We look around and see how many people are destroying their lives. I've been at too many grave sites of guys who went down that pathway. So we need to be called to a higher calling,
right.
And step away from that addiction. Now, another thing is work. Mm. And this is a fascinating thing in this book. She talks about how industrialization has broken up the family. That chapter really opened my mind up, because Dad is no longer doing the home craftsmanship. He's not the carpenter in the garage anymore.
Right.
He's getting a briefcase and going to work. He's stepping away. Whereas in the past, when we're more agricultural, Dad was home.
Yeah.
He was raising the kids with Mom, showing the boys how to do what men do, and they have that direct example. But no, now today, Mom's running the household. Mom's looking over the kids. We send them to school where there's another woman telling young men how to be, instead of Dad being there to lay that an example out. And so work, we've got to understand, is competing against our time with our sons to show them. There's a great cry in schools now to bring back shop class.
Yeah.
Because we got young men who don't know how to run a screwdriver.
Yeah, don't know how to use a hammer.
And now and the last thing on sex, all the research is in. Good, godly Christian men have the best sex lives of any group.
Mm.
You want to have a good sex life, guys? Be a godly, Christ-like servant to your family, and your wife will find you absolutely irresistible.
Yeah. All within the context of the family, right?
Yeah.
Then I want to go back to, you're talking about the industrialization on fatherhood, right? That is a big chapter in her book. And I'll give you a quote here. She says, the Industrial Revolution privatized the home and commercialized the public sphere, severing the ties between fatherhood and the daily family life. So exactly what you just said, you know, I grew up and my dad and I, he was home. You know, he was aerospace engineer. He worked at Martin Marietta, became Lockheed Martin. So he had a career, but his most important function was as father and husband,
right?
So when he's home, we fixed, you know, the electrical problem. We fixed the plumbing problem. We built some bookshelves. We worked on the car. I learned all of those things, you know, that now today I could probably have my own handyman, you know, business if I wanted. And in my family, you know, it's always dad can fix that. Well, then I do that with my son. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go we've got this drywall problem, or we've got a leak here, we're going to do this, you're coming with me, you're going to help me do it, I'm going to teach you how to do that, right? And what I've found now, and that's an important part with your sons, it's an important part of a function of what a dad does. Now we hire the handyman to come in, right?
Correct.
And we miss those opportunities. We think that being in the van, taking our kids to a ball field, which is not a bad thing inherently.
No, it's good.
But we think that that equals strong parental moments, when the reality is strong parental moments was always when I was working on a project with my son. And as we're working on that project with my son, I am modeling for him some things, but we're also, guess what that also led to, Tim? It led to real practical conversations about our life, real practical things. He would start opening up to me about something that happened at school that he would not have told me otherwise if we had been in the car going to the ball field, or if I let a coach take my position as the coach of my family.
Exactly.
We wouldn't have had that conversation. It would never have happened. And so there's deep meaning here when we say, guys, man, find a way to be home. Find a way to do things with your family where you use your hands, where you do something you enjoy together. You know, maybe just throwing the ball. You know, we spent many times in the backyard throwing the ball,
yeah,
right?
Athletics is not a replacement for showing a young man how to fix things.
Yeah.
How to treat. My dad pulled this on all of us when I grew up, and I've used it on my kids. We would get sassy with mom, and he'd come over and get about an inch away from my face, and he'd go, "Nobody talks to my wife like that." I still get a chill when I think about it. He taught me that you protect your spouse, and nobody, not even her children, get to cross that line of disrespect. It's those moments when a father can teach a son how to be a man and fixing things and investigating. This is the thing that fascinate young men.
Yeah, yeah.
They want to know how to do that. Now, my dad got in the car Monday, showed up Friday night.
Yeah.
But I grew up taking things apart. If something broke, I just disassemble the whole thing. I wanted to figure out how it worked.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I had to do it on my own. There wasn't anybody, say, putting it back together wasn't always easy, but taking it apart, I really loved that.
I think that's part of, a little boy becoming a man, you know, becoming a teenager. There are things, there are ways that we are uniquely different, the way that God put us together, uniquely different. And we have certain gifts, certain skills built into us by design, by you know, complete design, that when we fulfill those, right, we're not only walking in the way that God designed us, but things are right. They're just right. And I think two things. I'll say this, and I want you to speak to this. Two things. So I always say that with my son, walking with him, that I was imparting to him his identity in Christ. I was imparting that to him as a father, as the masculinity, the masculine side. With my daughter, I always said that I imparted to her her self-value. And I believe, Tim, that that is a critical role of the father. And it's...
In fact, there's research in on that as well.
Right.
Children get their self-esteem not from mom, but from dad.
Yeah.
Now, and there isn't a single mom on the planet wants to hear that.
Yeah.
But we always know mom's going to love us. But we get our self-esteem. So I patterned myself. When the kids brought their homework home, I was the one grabbing their papers going, "This is amazing. You did a great job on this. Hey, you missed a couple here. What can you do to not miss them next time?" But they always knew that I was highly interested in how they were doing. And I do it today. I'm a 70-year-old man. I got 40-year-old children.
Right.
But I take time to speak in their lives. "I'm so proud of you. You're my hero." They are my heroes. They are my resume. Trid Cathy, in his book, Success is Easier Than Failure, he wrote a quote. And I asked him one time when I met with him, I said, where'd you get that quote? And he couldn't remember either. So it might be fresh with him. But it says, you'll never see on any headstone, I wish I could have spent more time at the office. But what we're going to look back on is, I wish I'd have spent more time with my son, with my daughter, pouring into them love and encouragement so that they can fully become the champion that God created them to be. This is a huge responsibility. We all get it, but we're uncertain. I go back to that book, The Men We Need. There is chapter by chapter. It just walks you through and gives you practical advice and direction.
Yeah,
but gentlemen, it's time. We've got to step up, raise a generation that's confident about its future and not busy playing video games in the basement.
Yeah, I think back on my conversations with my daughter, you know, which is uniquely different from my son, because I want to piggyback off what you just said. And we have intentional date nights. You know, we intentionally go where it's just the two of us.
Right.
And what I have found is, and by the way, guys, put your phone down, right? When you go out with your kids, when you're riding, put the phone
down. Date your children.
Down.
Date your children.
Yes, because they're going to follow you, you know. So anyhow, that's a whole nother podcast. But what I found is I will look at her at some point in the conversation, and she just talks. And at some point in the conversation, I'll look at her and say, I just want to tell you this again. Is you are absolutely beautiful. You're right. Stunningly beautiful. And it's not just your physical attributes. It's you. It's your heart. It's your motives. And I don't ever want you to second guess that you are stunningly beautiful. Beautiful. And I'll tell you, Tim, she lights up. Her eyes will sparkle. She'll get this look on her face. And I realize in that moment that what I am gifting her, which is my role as a dad, right? I'm gifting her self-value. And dads, if you don't do it, she's going to go find that in a boy somewhere who is not going to give her self-value, who's not going to be mature enough to do any of those things, right? And so she's looking for that. So if you got daughters today, you need to go and you need to stop and you need to look them in the eye and you need to give that to them. Don't make it weird and awkward.
They are knowing sponges. They are constantly looking for that. I had a divorce recovery group I led many years ago, and we were talking about, you know, how men need encouragement and such. And one woman got real sour and she said, well, they act like I ought to give them a trophy every time they run the vacuum. And I said, well, do you want them to run the vacuum? Well, sure, they should share and responsibility. I said, well, go buy a bunch of trophies. If you want him to run the vacuum, then make it to where he thinks he's the only guy on the planet can do the vacuum right.
Right.
And he'll do it. He'll be faithful to it. That's how, and oh, men, they're so vain. And all. I said, now, tell me something. You ever get tired of being told how beautiful you are? All the women in the room got quiet. I said, oh, you girls are so vain. You're so self-centered. No, we have needs. Women want to be cherished. Men need to be respected.
There you go. There's the word.
That's what the scripture teaches.
Yep. There's the word, respected. That word right there, respected, is huge. And it's a two-way street in a relationship, right? I get that 100%. But I will say to maybe some women out there listening, and maybe you're having some difficulty in your marriage, or maybe you just can't figure him out. Sometimes just a small dose, I should say, of respect can go a long way. And it's not a respect that is empty respect. I encourage you to look at your husband, watch what he does, watch how he leads or tries to lead, or maybe how he pours himself into his work because he's trying to provide. He's working at it. Find something in that that you can say to yourself in your quiet moment.
You're right.
Boy, I really respect what he does.
You girls, you're the complicated ones. Us men, we're simple.
Yep.
You want something to be repeated, then reward it. Every time you reward it, a man says, oh, that felt good.
Yeah.
I'll do more of that.
Yeah. I also want to come back to something that you just said as well, and talking about the priority that we have with our kids. And as a dad who has a 21-year-old and a 25-year-old, I don't quite have the 40-year-olds yet, you know, seems like we're moving fast to get there. But what I can tell you is it goes by so quickly. And it's been said, right?
Amen.
The days are long and the years are short. And what I can tell you is I just saw a video the other day of when my kids were small. And I'm like, I feel like that was yesterday. So time is fleeting. You have but a second, but just a moment to invest in your kids and in your family. And you're going to wake up one day and you're going to see that they are have departed. They're going on their own way. And here's the one thing I want to, and Tim, you speak to this as well. The one thing I would warn you about, and that is, if you pour your life into your job and you miss your kids, that regret, we used an R word a second ago, respect, it's very important. Regret is the one thing you don't want coming.
No.
Yeah, I
no.
call it, it's a really bad bedfellow because it always arrives in quiet moments. It always arrives late at night, comes crawling into that bed. Look what you missed.
Exactly.
You know,
at the end of the day, your resume is going to be a picture of your family. How well did you do? If you fail at home, you're a failure. And it's never too late to start. And that's, I have a lot of regrets about not being there. A ministry is a demanding thing. There are a lot of late nights that you weren't expecting. Different things happen. So I have regrets, but it's never too late to start. It's never too late to build. Your children are going to lap up every ounce of encouragement and love that you give them. Even, like I said, I'm working even harder now with my adult children to love on my, to tell my sons how proud I am of them. And I can watch a 43-year-old attorney just kind of swell up a little bit. He's thrilled to hear that his dad thinks he's just the best thing ever.
Right.
It never stops. And by the way, in my retirement is coming soon. I'm looking forward. I cannot trust my children to raise my grandchildren well. And so I'm going to intercede with my grandchildren because I never had a grandparent around.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at that and I think there are going to be times when I can be at a McDonald's with my grandson and speak truth into his life.
Yeah.
And it'll be significant for him forever. So never too late to start. Today's the day, guys. Today's the day I get started being a little bit better dad, and every day put some more juice into it.
You know, hearing you talk reminds me of some of the things that I've seen here working with students on a daily and weekly basis. Sometimes we hear and we see from students what sometimes the parents don't see or hear, you know. And I have always found it so interesting to hear what kids want from their mom and dad, you know. And when they get down to it, and dad, you're working hard to provide for your family so that you can give your kids good things. You know, we all want our kids to have good things, right?
Right.
A good life, better than the life we had, and to buy them stuff and to take them on the best vacations and all that kind of stuff. But here's what I see and what I found with students when they really tell us what matters is they don't really talk about the car that mom and dad bought them. They don't really talk about the vacation that they went. They don't talk about the house. They don't talk any of those things. The one thing they always say that they want more of is time.
Time.
I want more time. And I think, you know, dads specifically, you're working hard, and it's part of your value system. So men get, we get valued by what we do. If we succeed in our job, succeed in what we do, then we find our self-identity in that. And that's something that can be very, very scary. We can't have our identity in what we do. We have to find our identity in who we are, right? But you're giving all these things, you're working hard so you can supply all these things, only to find out that the kids are like, yeah, all that's good, but I just want you.
Exactly.
I want you.
And I want to speak to those of you out there who have gone through a failed marriage, and you're looking and saying, well, you know, I always say to folks, okay, you didn't get plan A, so make it the best plan B possible. Be careful that you don't become the Disneyland dad. So every time the kids come to you, you feel like you got to entertain them.
Mm.
No, take them grocery shopping. Help wash the car together. Time, it's not buying them stuff. You're not going to buy their love. They need your time. You may have struggled and failed in that marriage relationship, but that doesn't mean you get a buy on your kids.
Mm.
You have to succeed there. You have to succeed. So never speak poorly about your spouse.
Yeah, that's good.
Your ex may be the craziest woman on the planet. Makes no difference. That's still their mama.
Yeah.
They don't need to hear that. Went to a conference one time. They said the worst time in a child of divorce is the handoff.
Mm.
And I started to think about that. Okay, now comes out the little nitpicking, the conversation. Oh, go sit in the car and you watch your mom and dad argue again. It's just the handoff time. And I thought about that and I thought, man, more divorcees need to understand that how you behave toward their parent, their other parent, will in many ways play out in their own lives.
Yeah.
And how they treat a future spouse. Do you want your child to go through a divorce? No person on the planet says yes. We want them to succeed. But if you're doing it badly toward their other parent, then you are laying landmines in that child's life.
Yeah.
And they deserve better.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Because I know there are a lot of people listening who find themselves in that situation, right? And there's a lot to unpack there. Right. There always is. But, you know, regret and bitterness are two things that you've got to ward off.
Right.
And bitterness will feed that conflict with your ex in those situations. And so I just think you got to look at your kids and say, they're worth more than that.
Exactly.
I need to forgive whether you feel like it's deserved or not, because forgiveness is a gift for yourself, not to the other person, right? And get past that for the sake of my kids. And of course, I'm going to be a winner in this as well, but for the sake of my kids, because you're right, the handoff, the conflict, what they continue to see is affecting negatively those kids. And I will say this too, back to buying the kids, you know, all the stuff, doing the Disneyland stuff. And you said, you know, take them grocery shopping, right? Take them to wash the car, whatever. I have always found, Tim, that my best conversations, when stuff really starts to come out for my kids that they really want to talk to me about, has not been when we go to Disney, or which we do. You know, we have our favorite rides, we go ride, or to do this other fun thing. It's always been on the mundane, regular stuff,
right?
You know, sometimes it's taking your daughter to dinner, right? Girls are different, you know, in those scenarios they might open up, but with your son it might be, let's go in the backyard and throw the ball together. Let's
one at that time.
Yeah, let's,
we see it when they're young, when they're little, and they imitate everything you do, and we think it's real cute, and then we forget that they're going to imitate us the rest of their lives.
That's right.
You're never done with your parents. You can be an old timer and still their influence is going to be in your life. I hate these commercials talking about, you know, when you start becoming your parent, because they're speaking against what God's plan was, which was that, in fact, you do become your parents.
That's right.
And take
right.
all their best qualities,
mm-hmm.
some of the negatives, and that's what we have to work for. But you are teaching them how to be a man, how to be a husband, how to be a father.
That's right.
That is significant. Yeah. And that is number one job.
Yeah.
Number one job in a man's life, to be that protector. Because when you look in those little eyes, you're staring into eternity. Mm. And they deserve your absolute best. Right, gentlemen?
That's
stand
correct.
Up and salute right now. That's it.
Yeah.
They are your resume.
Yeah. And you're sending them out into a culture that doesn't understand this,
no.
Right? And so you have to give them the tools. And I know, Tim, you know, we've talked about a lot here in this short time that we have together. Because we're going to have to do some more podcasts, by the way.
It's like hanging out with each other.
100%, 100%. But I will say that you might be listening to it and go, yeah, that's a lot. It's actually not. It's actually not. This is not rocket science.
No. One day at a time.
Yeah. And it requires what I call the power of the positive no. It requires you to give a positive no to good things so that you can give a positive yes to the great things. And, you know, basically what I'm saying is stop trying to do everything and pull away and decide to do the most important thing, the most critical thing. And that's much of what we were talking about here today is you don't know what step to take. If you're like, well, I didn't have a model. I didn't. Well, break that and get it a solid
church. So if you had negative, you've got to see that as the enemy. That is Satan that defeated your dad. And so you have to say, not in me.
Exactly.
And in fact, in my family, my siblings all say, that they're so proud of how I have defeated the gross hand's anger. Mm. Now, that's not fully true.
Yeah.
It's still there. It's the demon. It awaits me.
Right, right.
But they see a difference because I chose, and we all say it, I'm not going to do that like my dad did, and then we end up doing the same thing. You've got to be deliberate to say, I want to pass on all the best and put aside all the worst.
You know, for me, I kind of had the opposite, right? It was, I don't have patience like my dad. You know, I need to be more like my dad. I need to try to be like how he was and still is, right? And so, you know, I grew up like, what's wrong with me because I don't have any patience? My sister got all the patience. My dad was. I say is because he lives in eternity. We are created for eternity. But,
that's right.
I am not by nature a patient person. You know, I'm a type A, run after it, got a habit, got a timeline, you know, and probably many of the guys listening to this feel the same way. So I'd be like, just what's wrong with me? But what I learned was I learned how to see the world through a biblical lens that my dad gave me to understand. Yeah, Jeff, you're creative. You've got the skills to do it this way. You're type A, but you're tending to think that it all is about you. You know that everything's caught up in what your plan is. And,
right.
And my dad's patience in the way that he led was more of a meekness and humility. And so that meekness is not weakness, by the way. It's the opposite of
meekness is strength.
Yes. And he's the strongest man I've ever known, right?
Yeah.
And so...
And I had the privilege of knowing him.
Yeah.
And your mom. And they were
both
amazing Christian people.
I grew up, man, I'm like, how did I end up winning the lottery?
That's right.
With these two. But what that did in me is, yes, it gave me a model, but it also like, man, I hope I can hit the mark. Well, the reality was hitting the mark meant being less of,
right.
Not more of.
Yeah.
It meant saying no to things so that I could say yes to the right things. It meant, you know, backing away from things that the world tells me is success in order to embrace the things that really matter, you know,
mm-hmm.
really matter with my family, with my kids. And so, men, if you're listening to this, it's this is not rocket science.
No.
You can get there from here, you know?
Like I say, loving on your kids and encouraging them. They get to be teenagers, and taking their stuff away isn't that big a punishment anymore.
Yeah.
Grounding them, they just give you that look. Your only real control as they get older is they don't want to disappoint you, because they know how wonderful it is for your pride over them. You, how much you think of them.
That's right.
So when they come to those bad decisions, if the thought doesn't cross their mind, man, if I do this, my dad's really going to be disappointed. If that doesn't freeze them in their track,
yeah,
then chances are they're going to make a lot of bad choices.
Yeah. And yeah, something comes to mind too, because I was just going to kind of give a recap here in a second. But one thing that comes to mind too is being transparent with your kids. When you fail, embrace it.
Yeah. Apologize.
Apologize. And do it quickly. Do it quickly.
Show them how to apologize.
Yeah.
Show them that strong people admit their failures and confess that quickly.
Yeah.
I have always apologized to my kids when I lost it or I didn't take time to find out what the facts were, you know, whatever. If I made the mistake, I apologize. I wanted them to understand. And I've told them, I'll know that you've matured when you learn how to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
When you learn how to apologize, there's nothing more defensive than a teenager. They will manipulate, maneuver, do anything in the world to keep from saying, yeah, Dad, I messed up. But you teach them how to apologize, and they'll become mature people much quicker.
Yeah. I mean, we learn from our failures.
That's right.
Right? We learn probably more from our failures than we do our triumphs and our successes. I think, I also think, too, you know, we could go on and on with stuff, but I think too about if you have a strong-willed child, and you know, this is a little bit of parenting, but men, you know, we have a role in parenting too, is I typically will tell guys who are struggling with strong-willed kids is just remember this, your role is to break their will, not their spirit. And there's a difference between the two. So I have a strong-willed daughter,
right,
who when she has her mindset on something and she's running into her parents, she will not stop talking. And when she doesn't stop talking, she digs herself a hole really fast, right?
Right.
And I can feel it going up the back of my neck. You know, I'm like, oh, you know, she is hitting on every nerve as she goes up because she's not listening. She's being just strong-headed. She's being bullheaded,
right,
at this point. So
she gets that from her mother.
Yeah, it could be her dad. It's got to be her mom. But what I eventually do with her is, this has only happened on, you know, very few occasions, but she'll hit that threshold. She hits the threshold and mom backs down and now dad comes out. And I'm like, okay, we're fixing that. I'm going to show you I can be more bullheaded than you because of because of what we're trying to teach you. And she runs into a brick wall. Boom. And I mean, I come down heavy and hard because I'm seeking to break her will,
right,
not her spirit. So here's the difference. She runs to that wall and she gets it with both barrels. You know, I'm like, we're not doing this. I'm not putting it away. You're not saying another word. You're going to your room. You're losing these privileges. It's instant. It's hard because I've got to give her that correction. Then finally she quits talking and she'll go to her room. I give it about 30 minutes.
Yep.
Right.
Emotions die down.
Mm-hmm. I give it about 30 minutes. And then I walk into her room, open the door. She's sitting usually at her desk or she's doing something. And it's like, I say, what you doing? She says, I'm just doing this. I'm just doing that, whatever. And I say, stand up. And she just sits there. I say, stand up. She stands up. I turn around and I just wrap my arms around her. I give her a big hug and I'll say, I just want you to know that I love you.
Yeah.
I love you deeply. You know what happens every time, Tim? She melts.
Exactly.
She melts, cries, and then guess what happens? I find out what really was wrong.
That's right.
I find out, she'll say, oh, this boy, he said this, and or this teacher, and I just feel like I'm going to fail, and I just, you know, she pours it out. And I knew there was something else. It wasn't about she wanted the car. It wasn't about she wanted to go with her friends. It wasn't about, there was something else deeper. And the only way I could get to it is by breaking the will, then coming back in and showering her with my love, right?
There are limitations, but always with love.
Yeah, yeah.
So that coming back later is important to not just let it be an emotional time and she sits there and fusses and frets. So you come back around and say, you know, I'll never stop loving you. And then it's, okay, she's safe.
Yeah.
We let her wander on her own, she will continue to wander.
Yeah.
Show her the limitations, this far and no more. And oh, by the way, this is for your best.
Yeah.
They'll get it later, and they will repeat
to
their own children.
Yeah, it's modeling. So we ran after a squirrel there, which took us more into parenting. But what I will say is, guys, you're listening to this, and we'll kind of bring this to a conclusion. You're listening to this, and there's so much more that we can say, and we might actually follow up with another podcast. But what I will tell you is, look in the show notes, go get that book. The name of the book again,
The Men We Need by Brant Hansen.
So that will be in the show notes. Grab that book. Then the other thing is, you're not in church, get in church. Be in a strong Bible-believing church. I'm sitting right here with Pastor Tim at First Baptist Church Winter Guard. We always would love to have you there, so we come see us there. But bottom line is, be in a strong church. And once you're in that strong church, then begin looking around, get in a small group, and find those men that you could potentially approach and say, hey, would you mentor me? Hey, could I walk with the season with you? Maybe you and some other guys, right?
Right. We need each other, gentlemen.
Yeah, just start there. And then the last part is, just remember, this isn't rocket science, right? It may seem like it, but it's not. It's not actually complicated. And God has a better story, right, Tim? He's got a better story. And the gospel, obviously, at the end of the day, is the ultimate story of what the true Father is. And we want to walk in His light. But, guys, we're for you. I mean, we're for you 100%. And I know it's difficult out there, but any way that we can support you, of course, you can find Pastor Tim's contact and mine as well. And we look forward to having more conversation. Tim, man, we got to do more of these.
This is fun.
It is a blast. So we'll find some more topics, because there's plenty of them out there, and have you back on here very soon.
Anytime, brother.
Yep. So stay tuned for just some final thoughts, and thank you once again for being with us on Between Faith and Reason. Men, wherever you are today, I want you to hear this. You are not a mistake. You were made on purpose by a God who calls you son. You are not created to dominate nor to disappear. You are called to lead with love, to serve with strength, to protect with purpose. Whether you're a father navigating failure, a husband longing to lead well, a young man searching for identity, or a grandfather trying to leave a legacy, there is hope, there is healing, and there is a better story. Jesus, our true model of masculinity, shows us a man who knelt to serve, stood to confront evil, wept with the broken, and rose in power. So take heart. You're part of a bigger story. You were made for more. Thanks for joining us today on Between Faith and Reason. Until next time, walk in grace, walk in truth, and don't be afraid to live out the calling God has placed on your life as a man.
Thank you for joining us today, and we hope you found it inspirational, informative, and enlightening. Please be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also visit us at foundationacademy.net/behindfaithandreason. Thank you to our sponsors, Foundation Academy, where they have been building a foundation for life since 1958, in partnership with The Observer, you, your neighbors, your neighborhood.